There. Thank you, Ms. Walston. Good morning, everyone. I'm Susan Drummond, Kitsap County Hearing Examiner. Today is Thursday morning, 9 a.m., August 12th, 2021. We have two items on this morning's agenda. One is the Folk conditional use permit request for an accessory dwelling unit. The second is the Hillsdale preliminary plat and performance-based development. Typically, the requests for CUPs for an accessory dwelling unit don't take very long, and this doesn't look like it's going to be any different. So I am inclined to take this one first and then move to the plat. If Mr. Smith, I believe you're handling this one. Any objections to proceeding first with the ADU proposal? You're muted, Mr. Smith, but I doesn't look like you're objecting. You need to unmute yourself. So Walston, is that on our end or is he needs to do that?
No, there we go.
Can you hear me now?
Yep, I can hear you. Looks like you're fine with going first.
Yes.
Okay, all right. So the order of procedure on the CUP for the ADU as well as the plat proposal is as follows. We'll hear first from the planning department. The department will provide a summary of the proposal. Then the applicant will have an opportunity to present, and then we'll open the matter up for public comment. Anyone who wishes to comment on either proposal may do so. And then on these remote hearings, and this may be the last remote hearing for the county, but I don't know. The record is under the emergency rule kept open for a week, so through August 19th, and then a decision from me is out within 10 business days. So unless there are procedural questions, Mr. Smith, I'll go ahead and swear you in. If you could state your name for the record.
My name is Jeff Smith.
And you swear affirm to tell the truth under penalty of perjury under the laws of the state of Washington?
Yes, I do.
Thank you. So, Mr. Smith, I have reviewed the staff report and I have exhibits 1 through 31, and those are all admitted.
Okay. My name is Jeff Smith. I'm representing the Department of Community Development. This is an opportunity to provide affordable housing within the county. The request today is for approval of a conditional use permit for an accessory dwelling unit. The accessory dwelling unit involves a second floor conversion after the fact conversion, and it's for a detached garage for a second story. And I'm looking at 832 square feet for the ADU, and the primary unit is going to be 2,472 square feet. Right now, the garage has a separate entrance on the parcel, separate from the primary unit. And the primary unit and the accessory dwelling unit will be served by a two-party well, and they'll have separate sewage disposal systems. The subject property is located south of Port Orchard. It's on the south side of Oak Road East, Bethel Road. It's on the east side of Bethel Burley Road. The property is L-shaped and it's about 12.3 acres in size. The property is L-shaped. You can see on the map there that shows the footprint of the buildings that are least inventoried when this map was created. And there's single family units on similar size properties in the vicinity of the project. Property, like I said, is on the east side of Bethel Burley Road. And it's L-shaped. The property is flat. It includes general slope to the south with moderate slope downward toward the stream and wetland area located on the east portion of the property. So that there's a fish stream that runs along the west side, and then there's a fish stream with a category one wetland that runs along the east side. Includes a variety of outbuildings. The primary unit is located in northwest area of the property, and it was built in 1904. As you can see in the middle or south middle is the garage, which is currently existing, that was permitted in 2016. Okay. As Enderle indicated, the property has hydric soils to the center and includes a stream on the west, fish stream with a 150-foot buffer, and then a Category 1 wetland with 110-foot buffer. Property is zoned rural, or the comp plan is rural protection. It's one dwelling per 10 acres. And also the zoning is rural protection. That's one dwelling per 10 acres. And it's mainly for properties that are encumbered with critical areas. Here's the site plan. North is pointing to the left. Shows the subject property. Includes there's two driveways that are going from Southeast Oak Road. And based on the site plan, this is where the location is in the lower portion of the property, existing house. And then you can see as far as where the stream buffer is located, 150-foot buffer on the fish stream, as well as the wetland buffer. On the upper portion of the property. The garage is located to the west, or this portion of the property. So as indicated on the site plan, the second entrance to the garage is proposed to be fenced and eliminated. So the applicant is planning on complying with the requirements of one entrance only off of Southeast Oak Road. So it's consistent with the development standards for an ADU. And that green line indicates as far as the driveway that will lead from the primary unit to the driveway to the ADU. It shows here that the floor plan, it's going to be 832 feet in size. And let me go into the criteria here. So the project was reviewed for consistency with 17-420-030 and also 17-410-060 provisions for special uses. And I'm going to run through the categories or criteria. And the first one is an ADU should be only permitted in use in areas contained within urban growth areas. Well, as a permitted use. So this is outside the urban growth area, requires a conditional use permit, and that's pursuant to the standards in 17.550 for conditional use permits. So so only one ADU is allowed per lot. Well, the applicant is only proposing to converting an existing garage. There's no other accessory dwelling unit on the property. So the owner must reside in the primary residence or the ADU. Well, Daniel Folk is proposed to reside in the primary unit, and his father is going to reside in the accessory dwelling unit. So the next requirement is the ADU shall not exceed 50% of the floor footage of the habitable area. Well, the primary unit is 2,472 square feet. And they're proposing an 832 square foot accessory dwelling unit on the second floor of the garage. There's a requirement for that the primary unit cannot exceed 150 feet, but there's a caveat. If you are allowed, or if you are going to permit or not permit, but convert an existing garage, that is allowed to exceed the 150-foot requirement. So right now, the garage is going to be, or slash ADU is going to be 350 feet away from the primary unit. The two structures as will maintain a similar appearance. The applicant will comply with applicable health district standards. No mobile homes are proposed. As indicated, the ADU will use the same side street entrance as the primary residence, with the elimination of the second entrance with the fence off of Southeast Oak Road. And there's no accessory living quarters being proposed. And I want to go next slide. Here's an example of that has a similar appearance as the garage, same color, general color, pitch roof, and it shows as far as the actual square footage of the primary living area. This map shows the critical areas on the property. This is a result of a map that was created around 2015 when the garage was permitted. So it shows the, to the east, it shows the 110 foot wetland buffer for a category one. And the, to the west is the 150 foot stream buffer, fish stream buffer. And the garage is outside the buffer. However, the primary unit that was built there in 1904 is just outside the buffer, and it's treated as a non-conforming use based on Title 19 critical areas code, and it's allowed. So therefore staff recommends approval with the conditions in the site plan, excuse me, the staff report to you with.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. I do not have any questions for you. Is the applicant online?
You should be able to unmute, Mr. Folk.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can. Good morning, Mr. Folk. If you could state your name for the record.
Daniel Folk.
And you swear or affirm to tell the truth under penalty of perjury under the laws of the state of Washington?
I do.
Thank you. Is there anything that you wanted to add to Mr. Smith's presentation?
No, it sounded good.
Okay. Do you have any questions or concerns with the proposed conditions in the staff report?
I do not.
Okay. All right. Well, I do not have any questions for you. So at this point, we'll turn to public comments. Is there anyone who would like to comment on this proposal? Ms. Walston, I'm not seeing any hands raised, but if you see anyone.
I do not see any either.
Okay, let the record reflect there is not anyone who has indicated a wish to comment on this proposal. I do not see any code compliance issues with this proposal. I'll wait to make a final decision on approval, though, until the record closes. As I mentioned earlier, that'll be Thursday, August 19th under the emergency rule, 5 p.m. Anyone who would like to submit comment would need to do so by 5 p.m. that day. That should go to Ms. Walston. She'll forward those comments on to me. And then my decision will be out within 10 business days, although this is a fairly straightforward proposal. So typically it'll come out within a few days from that Monday. The following, probably Monday or Tuesday would be typical. So are there any questions from either the applicant, Mr. Folk, or from the department?
No.
Okay. All right, so thank you all for your participation. We will move to the next item on the agenda. And Mr. Folk, you're welcome to stay online for this item if you wish to hear it, but there's no need to do so since we've completed the review of your proposal.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. So I think the order of procedure on this proposal will be pretty much the same as with the ADU, although I think there are some citizens who are interested in commenting on this proposal. But we'll go ahead and start with the planning department. Mr. Poff, are you presenting for the department on this one?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay. Good morning. If you could state your name for the record.
Colin Poff.
And you swear or affirm to tell the truth under penalty of perjury under the laws of the state of Washington? Thank you. And Mr. Poff, I have reviewed the staff report on this proposal and I have exhibits 1 through 36 and those are all admitted.
Okay.
I believe Amanda will be sharing a presentation here, and I will pull up my notes as well. So my name is Colin Poth, and I'm a planner with DCD. So I'll be presenting this today. This project has been in review for a while, probably a little over a year. I've been project lead for a portion of that time. I did author the staff report that you have there. And this presentation isn't meant to go over all the detail that's in the staff report, but hopefully hit all of the elements of the project, analyze some of the code requirements and our findings as well. And so hopefully comprehensively go through kind of the important aspects of this proposal. I think you mentioned that you have all of the exhibits in the record. We did have one additional that we'd like to add. I think potentially Amanda has it. It's two comments that have been received since we last did the notice of hearing, so within the last week. So if possible, okay, we'd like to add that to the record as well.
Okay, those two public comments are admitted. I'll allow Ms. Walston to do the numbering, but I imagine there'll be exhibits 37 and 38.
I think it's exhibit 37 because they'll be combined into one document.
Oh, okay.
But yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So this proposal is called the Hillsdale Preliminary Plat. It's for a preliminary plat and a performance-based development to divide two existing lots into 30 new lots. Located in the urban low residential or UL zone in the Silverdale urban growth area in central Kitsap County. The applicant owner is Hillsdale Kitsap LLC. Agent is David Bannon from Bannon Engineering. Project manager is Barry Margoless, and apologies if I pronounce that incorrectly. This application was deemed complete back in June of 2020, and a notice of application was issued a month after that in July. We did do a CEPA determination of non-significance early in 2021. So both of those have attached comment periods to them. So we did receive public comments kind of throughout the project originating from both of those notices that went out. And we'll summarize that later as well. So on the next slide, you'll see where this is located. This is all of Kitsap County. It's there in the central Commissioner District number 3, covering two parcels. It's a little bit southwest of Silverdale, again in the Silverdale urban growth area. The next is just a regional aerial. So this shows just getting you an idea of what is in the vicinity or the surroundings. Those are the two parcels there. They actually split New Anderson Road. So there's one on each side. And you can see Silverdale Elementary located directly to the north. The vicinity is generally just more residential. And then to the south, as you can see, there's a wooded steep area with a type F stream. So this should give you an idea of the area. And then the next is the zoning. The yellow is urban low. So this is the UL zoning district. The UL zone is zoned for a minimum of 5 dwelling units per acre and a maximum of 9 dwelling units per acre. So as you can see, this area or general vicinity could be characterized generally as urban low with some different zoning. I think that's a urban medium there in the southeast, but just generally similar zoning. And the lots are in the area kind of have a variety. We have some that are some developments in the area that are kind of a similar character. Potentially newer developments under the urban low zoning. We also have some lots in the directly adjacent to this that are larger. And many of those may have preceded the current zoning or potentially even Growth Management Act in the 90s. This has been in the UGA, I think, since 1998. But in any event, the zoning is urban low. The next just shows the critical areas. The main thing to speak of here is the type F stream. They're located in the south. It does extend a little bit onto the property in terms of it's in a ravine And the ravine does extend a little bit onto the southern property. And that's a steep wooded area. Generally speaking, outside of that critical area, the site is relatively cleared of vegetation and relatively flat. On the next, this is just showing in the green, actually the extent of the buffers. So that stream on the, what is on the right side here or in the south of the development is what's called a type F stream, which has a standard 150 foot buffer. And also because it's in a steep ravine, there's a required 25 foot vegetation buffer from the top of slope. And that's what that line indicates. And none of the proposed lots actually actually impact that required buffer. So there's no direct impacts in that way. There is a trail, a 5 foot pervious trail that kind of loops into the south there and into that buffer area. And that would account for, I think, 1200 square feet of impacts from a trail, which the applicant has proposed 8,600 square feet of buffer enhancement in that area, which will be reviewed again at a later date. But they did submit a critical areas assessment and habitat management plan being close to a type F stream. So that was reviewed as well in this review. So that kind of summarizes the main concerns from a critical area ordinance perspective. Next, we'll just show the site plan just to introduce kind of the general features of the site on the next slide. And I'll zoom in a little bit to hopefully show these a little bit better, but I just want to show again the general features. One more, there you go. On the south side, which is on the left here, there's 12 lots proposed. And on the right side, the north side, there's 18 lots for a total of 30, all fairly uniform in size. There's two private roads. So Newt Anderson Road Northwest goes right through the middle of this development. And there's two private roads accessing each side of the development that have sidewalk and a landscape strip. And then of course, the lots themselves, there are some open space areas, which I'll show in greater detail. Some of those spaces are kind of connected by a little bit of a trail system within interior to the development. And there's also, as I'll show in more detail later, a pedestrian easement there on the right side or the north side, which allows public access to the school to the north. So this gives you an idea of the general overall site plan. On the next, you'll see just the south side. On the next slide, again, you have on the left that critical area buffer that I spoke of. That's tract A. It's slope and buffer, and it has the trail in it. To the south of that, you'll see tract B, which is one of the larger open spaces, which is will have a recreational amenity within it as well. And aside from that, you can see the lots and kind of the loop access there, accessing each driveway. On the next slide, you'll see the north side. Again, a couple of open space areas, open space B and D, and a very small one there, C, within the road. And then the 18 lots, the school connectivity trail, et cetera. So that is, those are the major features of the site. The next slide is just our development standards table. There are a lot of things to review in terms of parking, landscaping, land segregation standards in Title 16. This is just to show, the general UL standards. And so for the UL zoning, the minimum density that is required is 5 dwelling units per acre. The maximum density that is allowed is 9 dwelling units per acre. Maximum density is based off of the gross area of the site. So if you take these two parcels and put them together, you have about 4.5 acres, which would under current zoning theoretically allow for 41 dwelling units at 9 dwelling units per acre. So we review this as under the gross density, and they're providing 30 units, which is actually approximately 6.9 or 7 dwelling units per acre as a density. They also meet the minimum density. If you take out critical areas and other tracts, open space, calculate minimum density. They meet the minimum density of 5 dwelling units per acre. So they are within those requirements. There's a pretty small minimum lot size in UL of 2,400 square feet and a maximum lot size of 9,000 square feet. These lots, as I said, are pretty uniform, ranging between 3,200 and 4,300 square feet in size. So kind of within a range of what you might see for new urban developments. The minimum lot width is 40 feet, maximum lot depth is 60 feet, a maximum height of 35 feet, and buildings, you know, of course, will be reviewed at a time of building permit, but none of these standards will change, but I'll go to the next slide and describe what performance-based development means. As I said, this is a combined review of a preliminary plat and a performance-based development. I'll read kind of what the intent of this is. A performance-based development essentially allows for some flexibility in site planning. And the purpose statement in our code reads as such. It's in 17.450.010. It's to allow flexibility in design and creative site planning while providing for the orderly development of the county. A performance-based development is to allow for the use of a lot clustering in order to preserve open space, encourage the creation of suitable buffers between different types of development, facilitate the residential densities allowed by the zone, provide for increased efficiency in the layout of the streets, utilities, and other public improvements, and to encourage the use of low-impact development techniques and other creative designs for the development of land. So this is kind of the outline of a PBD. I want to reiterate that it does not allow for change in, like the slide before showed, the required lot sizes or density, but a little bit of flexibility. So what they're proposing is a reduction in side setbacks in the northern area. Those are lots 1 through 18, from the required standard of 5 feet down to 4 feet. And then in the southern area, they're requesting to allow a reduction for a portion of the front setback for lots 23 through 25, from 20 feet to as little as 13 feet. And the image kind of shows these lots in the far south. You can see parcel lines, very kind of difficult to see, but you can see parcel lines there in the south, kind of set back more from the street than adjacent lots. My understanding of this is that there's a infiltration trench kind of on the other side of the street that requires a 10-foot setback. And because of that, those parcel lines need to be set back further as well to accommodate that. You'll see that with the way that the buildings will be and the driveways in terms of setback from the sidewalk will be uniform to other lots. So it should look uniform actually on the ground. But in terms of the actual setback, they need the flexibility there for the setback to be reduced in some of these corners of these lots. So those are the requested deviations and while we review this against the PBD criteria, which brings me to the next slide, which is open space. Just kind of go over the general requirements for open space. There's PBD open space requirements in 17.450.040. There's also Title 16 Lands Irrigation Standards, urban standards for open space. So there's a general requirement of 15% of the lot area to be landscaped or open space. So that would equate to 29,000 square feet total, which they have exceeded. And they also have a few of their open space designated as active or recreation space. And there's a requirement that per lot, there's 390 square feet of recreation space. For 30 lots, that comes out to 11,700 square feet. They've proposed 19,475 square feet. kind of numerically, we can show that it meets these standards. On the next slide is a conceptual landscaping plan, which illustrates this. There are overall a few open spaces. Tract A is the critical areas and trails. And there are three active open spaces to meet that recreation requirement. So open space A, which has a recreational amenity within it. open space B and open space D. And so overall, you can see kind of what they're proposing here. I think it should be noted that this conceptually is meets our standard, but landscaping plans will be reviewed again with site development. So there's the ability to look at this in a little bit more detail in the future, but they provided us as also required street trees along interior roads, which could be within the roads or actually within the lots themselves. And then also some street trees along New Anderson, which are required. The typical standard is every 25 linear feet. Looks like they have more on the north side than the south side. Again, we'll look at this in a little bit more depth. They require some landscaping at entrances as well. But generally, this conceptual plan meets the landscaping and open space requirements of code. There'll also be some vegetation to retain as well to the top, on the top here, on the west of the development that is actually outside of their property line. So I believe that is vegetation to be retained. So that is an overview of the open space. The next slide is for just this infiltration trench that I mentioned. Again, we're in the south of the development here. We're showing that setback from the infiltration trench that's affecting their front setback for those lots. But this the preliminary plat had a stormwater review and is generally acceptable in terms of stormwater and from our development engineers. And lastly, the next slide is access. New Anderson Road is what's called a local county road. That's its designation. And off of the local county road, there are two private roads, one accessing each side of the development. So those will be private. They have a sidewalk and landscaping strip. And they also have, you can see in yellow here, a public easement. And actually this easement has been already recorded between the school district and the developer granting public access to the school. And the yellow area kind of indicates, generally not perfectly, what area is shown on that easement as public access. And this originated from a requirement to have connectivity to schools, as is a requirement of any development within, I think it's a half mile or maybe a mile of a school. And so that was to satisfy that requirement and allow for safer walking conditions within the development and also just connecting for school-age children. On the bottom is their right-of-way plan. So that's New Anderson Road. Again, a local county road where they'll have a curb gutter sidewalk for the length of their frontage. Which brings me to the next slide, which is going back to the process here. So we kind of covered all of the major elements of the project. This is an overview of public comments that were received. And so in the staff report, you'll see that there's a log of comments and county responses to each of these comments that were received. For the purposes of this presentation, I've kind of organized them thematically and won't go into the level of detail that the staff report might go into. But to introduce these topics, as they kind of relate to things that were reviewed or incorporated in review in greater detail, or at least indicate things that were looked at in greater detail in this process. So the first was traffic calming or local traffic. Concerns about increasing traffic in the area. There is a traffic impact analysis prepared by the applicant, which looks as a standard at PM peak hour trips. And also trip generation for single family homes is the assumed use here. And which is, I believe, 10 trips a day or so. And so we reviewed the traffic impact analysis, but it was also pointed out to us that there's some localized traffic concerns with school drop off and start times as well that were not directly assessed. As far as traffic calming goes, that was a concern as well. And if we can achieve safe walking conditions here for a road that the comments pointed out that there's some speeding that occurs here. I think it's a 25 mile per hour road. And so there were just generally concerns about local traffic and if there's gonna be traffic calming measures. And as far as things like speed humps go, or other traffic calming. There is a county process for that in terms of a petitioning from the neighborhood, as well as doing studies such as like traffic counts or speed counts to achieve that those traffic calming, you know, initiated by the county at least. And in addition, we looked at their plan for frontage improvements, which extends on the length of their property, which will have sidewalks and street trees. And also they've proposed 11-foot traffic lanes. And actually the county standard for local roads is as little as 10 feet. So we will ask to at least evaluate having 10-foot travel lanes here as a traffic calming measure. For area-wide traffic, that is just a general concern for this development, as well as pre-existing conditions or unmitigated pre-existing traffic concerns, such as queuing at intersections. And I won't go into the detail that the staff report goes into, but discuss some of those specific concerns. We do have a transportation impact or a TIP, Transportation Improvement Program, 6-year program, that does identify a couple of projects, one being in 2023, a signalization of Apex and Anderson Hill Road. And the development is required to pay a proportionate share towards that project, as well as a right turn channelization at, I'm forgetting the intersection, but that is another slated project, and as well as some other candidate projects. So we do have some programmatic elements that address area-wide traffic, but it's noted to be a concern of the neighborhood and vicinity. Density and parking, generally speaking, I show that there are kind of some larger lots in this area, some historic lots, and this development is much more dense than what would be directly adjacent. And so generally issues that come with that and just concerns about the character and the density of development, and also the parking. So it was shown or brought to our attention that there's concerns about overflow parking, other developments having illegal parking within right of way, for example. This does have a standard parking requirement of 2 spaces per unit, which are actually outside of garages, but on the lots themselves, as well as 15 on-street spaces within the development is required. And they've provided those 2 spaces, as well as the 15 on-street spaces, meeting the minimum parking requirement, as we've seen with other recent UL or urban low developments. Another concern was just with frontage improvements. So as I showed on New Anderson, they have curb gutter sidewalk along their frontage. Going back a little bit in time, there was a discussion of frontage improvements and also meeting our requirements for safe walking conditions and safe routes to schools type of requirements. At the time, there was some uncertainty about a public access easement to the north there. And there was discussion of a proposal to widen the south shoulder up to 8.5 feet, that widened shoulder essentially becoming a walking path. That would have been a technical deviation from a road standard, but that was what was looked at. And there were some concerns with that also from the neighborhood in terms of loss of vegetation, shortening of driveways, and some other concerns. And in the subsequently, the that easement was recorded to the north, directly allowing public access abutting the school. And given that, satisfying the codified requirements for school connectivity. But it's noted that there is concerns with the frontage improvements as well. Emergency access was brought up a few times. There have been concerns in the area just that this actually does not have an outlet to the east. And so emergency access comes from the west, from Dickey Place. And there's a lot of development or future development that would need to be accessed in this way. And concerns of this new 30 lot development, increases that risk. And we don't have a codified, standard to require additional outlets for a 30 lot development. We would look at that for a single development that has more than 1,000 average daily trips. But for this particular development, the access on a New Anderson meets the requirement, but it's noted that was a concern that came up for emergency access. Lastly was cultural resources. The Department of Archaeology and Historic Preservation, DAHP, commented and were requesting that we look into doing a cultural resources survey of the area based on their desktop review of the area. We did consult with them a little bit and also consulted with the Suquamish tribe about them, and the tribe's review showed a kind of a low potential for impacts there. And so we are requesting as a condition that they have an inadvertent discovery plan, and that would be submitted with your site development activity permit. So again, that doesn't go into level of detail that you might see in some of the comment response that in the staff report, but that shows some areas of concern and areas of review that were incorporated here. So the last slide is the conclusion of this presentation. Again, this is a combined review of a performance-based development as well as a preliminary plat. So the hearing examiner should make a finding if it meets the PBD criteria in 17.450.050. We reviewed this against all that criteria, Title 16 land divisions, Title 17 zoning, and other development standards. And with that review and this presentation, we'd recommend approval of the plat, given the 64 conditions that you can see in the staff report. So that would conclude my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Poff. I don't have any questions for you. Is the applicant online?
And I'm not sure who is wanting to speak first. I know we have several.
The applicant is online.
Reps. And who wanted to speak first? I know we had Mr. Bannon, Mr. Margulies, and
you could just, from the applicant's side,
I'll
you
just can move them all over. How about that?
Yeah, move them all over, and then they can.
I think those are the three names.
Can anybody hear me?
I can. Good morning. Is that Mr. Margulies?
Yes, it is.
You could state your name for the record.
I'm Barry Margulies.
And do you swear or affirm to tell the truth under penalty of perjury under the laws of the state of Washington?
Yes, I do.
Thank you. Is there anything that you wanted to add to the staff presentation? And you may decide, I mean, I understand there may be some public comments on this. And so you you can also address concerns that, I mean, you'll have the opportunity to address concerns that arise afterwards as well.
I just wanted to say that Colin Poff was the third planner on this project. And we appreciate his effort in diving into the project, taking it over, and doing the thorough job that he did. So as the applicant, we support the recommendation. We support the conditions of approval. I would hope that my engineer, Dave Bannon, is online. And we also have Matthew Vivian from Van Ness Feldman to offer any legal comments should that be appropriate. So that's about as much as I have to say right now. I believe all the issues with public comment, Collins addressed thoroughly, and we look forward to working with the county to make this project happen.
Okay. So Mr. Margulies, should we go ahead and move to public comment? And then depending on the nature of the comments, the applicant can decide on appropriate responses.
That sounds fine to me.
Okay, all right. So at this point, we'll open this up for public comment. Ms. Walston, I do not have a list in front of me.
I don't have anyone that has signed up necessarily. If we've got anyone who in the attendee side or public that would like to speak, if you want to click on the raise hand icon or indicate that you wish to speak, I can go ahead and pull you over and we can do it that way.
And I'm not seeing raised hands, but Ms. Wilson, you may have a better.
I am not seeing any either, so.
Okay. All right, well, it looks like there's not anyone who is indicating a wish to provide public comment on the proposal.
Can I mention one?
I'm sorry?
We did receive one email during the hearing from from one person that was unable to get on the phone line, it looks like.
Okay.
So we could forward their email to you.
Yeah, no, if you could, that would be great. And just for the record, there were also two comments that came in as well that Mr. Poff had mentioned earlier. They'll probably all go into Exhibit 37, and I will review all of those as well as any other comments which come in during the while the record remains open, which will be for a week. So if there was anyone, the reason we've kept the record open for a week is just in case anyone has technical difficulty calling in. We've been fortunate that that has not been an issue, but we wanted to be conservative on that front. So at this point, we'll just turn back to the applicant. Mr. Margulies, I do not have any questions for you. I think the staff presentation was very thorough. And of course, there was additional detail in the staff report as well. But is there anything that you wanted to add at this point?
The only thing I want to add is I'm surprised my video camera isn't working.
So. Oh, right. Do you have, I don't know if you have to click it. Sometimes there's there's the mute. So you're definitely unmuted, but there's also a video where it can, you click the video icon and then you, and I don't know if that's blocked or if it's just.
Yeah.
And Ms. Wilson, I don't know if you see anything.
You might be able to try it now. Try one more time. I just changed the setting.
Ready on that. Okay.
So there you go.
Oh, there you go, Mr. Margulies. I can see you now.
Oh, and a cat.
I can't hear you, though.
Oh, but now you're muted, though.
Now you're muted, so you need to unmute.
Mute, too. Oh, okay. I think we're all good now, are we?
Yeah, we are. I can see and hear you. So.
Oh, this technology is mind-blowing.
It is.
No, I think, as I mentioned earlier, I thought Colin did an excellent job presenting all of the work that we've done together, and particularly the work that he's done on this project. So I know he's worked closely with Dave Bannon, our engineer, and as I mentioned earlier, we're supportive of the recommendation and the conditions of approval.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Margulies. As I noted, I do not have questions for you. The record, of course, on this will remain open through August 19th. And I always note this for applicants that are, if there are comments that come in that the applicant feels are new in some way, or perhaps I should be pointed to something in the record to address them. I'll typically allow the applicant to address any comments, even though it's after that 1 week period.
So. And may I ask, how would you communicate that? Would you send us an email?
I wouldn't communicate it with you, but Ms. Walston will be tracking all that, and you can just check in with her and ask her for any comments that come in by the close of the record. She can forward those on to you. That would be probably the best way to do that.
And she'd be in touch with us as to how long the record is open.
So the record won't be open any longer than a week, unless you all have a response to anything that comes in. But otherwise, the record will close next Thursday, August 19.
Okay.
And then a decision is out for me typically within 10 business days. If you all wish to provide a response, then technically the record's open a bit longer. But did any other procedural questions?
No, it's understood. Thank you very much. Appreciate your review of this.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay, I think that is it. This is my last hearing for Kitsap County, so last two decisions. We had hoped that it would be live, but unfortunately, this is remote. I understand we may be, the county may be going to live next. But Ms. Walston, is there anything else that I need to address this morning before we adjourn?
No, I think you've covered everything.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you all for your participation. We are adjourned.
Thank you
so much.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Susan.
Yeah.